Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Call his wife and hey, how we doing? A little after four. McMonagle here with you. Rocking with you for one more hour on our 5-hour midnight ride until the warm up show will come your way. 888 808 1019. Let's get to some calls here as we're talking baseball. We're talking a little bit of football. We're talking Knicks. Hard Knocks tonight. Get a little glimpse. And I told you, I like the idea of Hard Knocks for my team. I do. I liked it for the Jets last year. I like it for the Giants this year. I want every opportunity to get as close and involved with my football team as possible because I feel like sometimes it's hard to. In this day and age of our fantasy football teams, the minute the game's over, we're focused on another game. We're more worried about, like, I know a bunch of guys whose fandom is like waned in this fantasy football era where you're so concerned about your team and the guys, you know, it's for money, it's for this, it's for that. We're watching the Sunday Ticket. Now that it's on YouTube, I was able to watch it this year. If you had it in previous years, contact someone. You might be up for some money. Who knows? You might get part of that $4 billion settlement. But I welcome any opportunity to get closer to my team, get closer to the organization, have a feel for the players, because it's once a week. So I'm looking forward to it a lot with the New York Giants. And, I mean, it hurts that they have their own, you know, the ability to edit, and they have the editorial final say, which makes me wonder what this is going to look like. And they are going to focus, apparently, on the Saquon Barkley situation. And whether or not he was given they are insinuating in the promo that it sounds like they asked him, hey, you're going to let us know, right? When Saquon Barkley claimed he, you know, we'll see if the claims match. We'll see if Saquon Barkley has an issue with the way it's perceived afterwards. But I don't care about that. What we're going to get is Daniel Jones. That's what we're going to get. We're going to find out about Daniel Jones. Because you know there's no way they're going to say, oh, yeah, we had real trepidation. Oh, yeah. Oh, we loved Drake May. We were doing everything we could to move up and trade Drake May. That is not going to be said. But we'll find out. Looking forward to it. And then, of course, last night, the Mets, as they win a game that this offense, there's the good and the bad, right? The good, first off, the good is it's an important win. It's an important win coming off losing two straight. You do not want to take this excellent June, right? This June where you've done everything you possibly could. The offense has awoken. You know, you've dealt with you've beaten up every good starting pitcher you faced along the way. And the only team you lost to was the hottest team in baseball, the only team hotter than you over the last month, which is the Houston Astros. But ultimately, it was a phenomenal June. You got yourself back to around 500. Now they are at 500. And you don't want to start getting into losing streaks. Two is enough. You don't want to come now out to Washington to play a team that, in my opinion, is inferior to you, that you're battling with in the wild card standings. You don't want to go out to Washington and lose the first game of that series and now have a three-game losing streak, start July with a loss. Like, you just don't want to do it. And for this team to go out there and score the runs they've scored, and again, kind of shut down throughout the middle of this game, but what I love about them is they're opportunistic and they play bully baseball, where you get that error. You know, they're down a couple of runs. You get the error from Abrams, the shortstop, but the tail of ground ball goes right through his legs, and boom, Alvarez makes you pay. Like, if you make a mistake against the Mets, if you give them an inch, they're going to take a foot. That's how they've got to play, and that's how this offense has been playing. And then the same thing in the 10th where, you know, they have an opportunity to win the game in the bottom of the 9th. Diekman throws the ball away. They've got a runner at second base, nobody out. And the Mets figure out a way to get out of it, and you know they're going to make you pay. We gave you an opportunity to win the game. We threw the ball away. You couldn't take advantage. Now we're going to put up 6 in the 10th. And J.D. Martinez, who in my mind has started this whole thing, by his emphatic nature of how important the meeting was, I'll give Lindor credit for starting the meeting and now what he's done since he's moved to leadoff. But for me, it's J.D. Martinez putting the importance on the meeting and giving them a moment to really look back to. And then plus the walk-off home run against Miami, I think, was still the biggest hit of this season. That's where it all started for me. So J.D. Martinez comes through with another big, you know, three-run home run. The offense scores runs. They figure out a way to win a game against Washington that they desperately needed to win. And now start a road trip in the positive, but then there's, of course, the negative, which is this bullpen. And yes, they're down, Diaz, but ultimately, I mean, you know, Nunez came in and pitched fairly well, but besides, you know, him maybe, and, you know, I don't know if there's any guys I trust out on that bullpen. And you got guys like, you know, Jay, and you got guys like, you know, Matt Festa, over the last 2 days, who've gone in there and pitched important innings and important moments, and they just don't have it. And, you know, obviously Reed Garrett has come crashing back to earth since that hot start. I mean, he's no longer someone you trust implicitly. Ottavino is no longer in the circle of trust. You know, Diekman is having trouble throwing strikes and throws the ball away and plays poor defense. And ultimately, it's hard for me to look at this Met team through any other prism than what are they going to do at the deadline? What are they going to do at the deadline? The Yankees have been terrible. The Yankees have been up and down. I don't have any doubt what they're going to do at the deadline, whether they'll be successful at it or whether the moves they make will actually work out. Different story. But we know how what they're trying to do. The Mets are a little bit up in the air. And so it's almost like every game and everything they do goes back to, well, how will this impact what Stearns thinks? And how will this impact how they go about the trade deadline? And for me, this offense has already shown enough. And the way they play when Alvarez, who's clearly one of the leaders of the team, has made an enormous difference and comes through with a big hit in this game, you know, it's whether it's Lindor at the top of the lineup, like this offense has shown me enough. Even Nimmo, who had a scary moment, hitting his head on somewhere in the bathroom. He woke up confused and disoriented after smashing his head in the bathroom, which is scary. But like I said before, when he comes up with the idea for the flux capacitor, then we're all going to be thanking him. But thankfully, we can make light of it a little bit. He seems okay, and hopefully he will be. But he's obviously shown a power surge and been someone who's extremely important in the lineup. And I've just seen enough. I have seen enough to believe in the starting pitching that might not get deep into games and that leads to the problem with the bullpen, but just as far as, you know, pitching well and giving you results, albeit, again, not late into the game, has been excellent, has been better than we thought heading into the year. What was the perceived obvious weakness of the team has not been. And whether it's the top of the rotation where you're hoping you get Sanga back, I want Severino here the rest of the year. I can't even think about pulling this nonsense about selling some and buying some, and maybe Severino's expendable because you believe you have, you know, Sanga coming back, and you have Buto, and you have Scott, you have Lucchese. Like, I'm not messing with Luis Severino right now. But when you look at him, you look at the rest of the rotation, you look at this offense that's been the best offense in baseball for the last month, I've seen enough where I know I can compete inside this National League wild card. I know I can be a wild card team. I know I can be a playoff team. And if you know that, then they deserve a chance to prove it. And the only way to do that is to go attack this trade deadline, and whether it's another starting pitcher and move other pieces to the bullpen, whether it's go find those bullpen pieces, clearly the Mets and David Stern need to be out there attempting to make this team better and foregoing the earlier plans of building the farm system from within, which they don't have to completely abandon, but it can't be the forefront of your mind anymore. It just can't. Not when this team has shown you this much. Not the impact that J.D. Martinez has had, Lindor has had, like Alvarez has had, Vientos. I hadn't even mentioned Vientos and how great he's been. Like, I'm not messing around. These years, anything can happen. The Diamondbacks were in the World Series last year. This could be a special year for the Mets. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And, you know, it's tough to always have that futuristic look at the team, and sometimes it's just about the day. But right now, in this stretch leading up to a month from now, in July 30th, like, all these games matter, and all of them tell a story, and all of it lead up to the front office. And last night was another piece, a perfect example of this is really good. This is dynamic and bully baseball and shows you everything you need to see from an offense. And this is really bad. And this is going to hamper them. And merely standing pat isn't enough to give this team an opportunity. Merely saying, hey, I won't sell everybody like I wanted to, is not enough, because this is a problem. And it's time to be problem solvers instead of problem creators. And it's time for fixing this team as opposed to fixing this franchise. That was the move heading in, and I got it. And I understand it, and you can still kind of do that. But it's now time to fix this team. The 2024 Mets need fixing, and that's exactly what needs to happen. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls real quick. Eddie in Rockland, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris, what's happening, Coach McConnell?
Coach McConnell, sure, why not? What's up?
I see the Hard Knocks, and I got a couple of questions for you. First of all, did you see the 100-year anniversary show on the Giants?
No, I didn't see it. I saw like all the news stories on it. I saw a lot of the pictures. I've talked to several people who were there. It sounded like a phenomenal night.
Yeah, one game, Phil Sims or Eli for you?
Eli Manning.
For one game?
Yeah, I have to do it. I didn't see. Wow. I saw a little bit of Sims. I vaguely remember. But I'll be honest, the first big game I remember, Jeff Hostetler started. So I've seen Eli Manning go beat the undefeated Patriots. I don't know how I could say anything
other
than
Eli Manning. You don't remember the Dan Reeves season where they were one game of winning? If they beat the Cowboys, they would have been the number one seed?
I didn't
see that season?
Yes, I did. I suppose I did see that season, yes. It's not as memorable as the two Super Bowl championships I saw, but yes.
No, of course. Listen, you said you didn't see Sims. There was still a good.
Well, I didn't see the best. I didn't see Sims go out there and hardly throw an incompletion in the Super Bowl in 1986. I missed that one, or 87 by that, you know, in February of 87, but or whatever. But I didn't see the Phil Sims that went to Disneyland. I didn't see that Phil Sims. But as great as he was, and as great as he was in that game. I grew up when I grew up. I watched what I watched. Eli Manning, one of the great fourth quarter quarterbacks, and led two of the more unlikely Super Bowl runs in history, including beating what would have been considered the greatest NFL team in history had they won the game. So I'll take Eli Manning.
Right. All right. Well, I'll dispute that. But on the Hard Knocks, you see Shane talking about Barkley, asking him to give him a chance to either talk to him.
Yeah.
And obviously that didn't happen. Now, if you were Shane, right, and you could turn back the clock,
yes,
would you have controlled and made a trade and made sure Barkley didn't end up in your own division, and would have done something like that and moved him along? Because obviously, if they wanted him, they would have laid an offer down before he tiptoed it. If you would have known that through the grapevine, Barkley's going to Philadelphia, he's going to Dallas, and he's going to Washington, you would offer him something before he went there, right? Not afterwards.
I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but let me just answer the first point where you mentioned the trade. I didn't need hindsight. I didn't need him to go to Philadelphia. I wanted to trade him in real time. So I don't need to have to go back and have the hindsight. In the moment, the team was going nowhere. I thought there was a very good chance he wouldn't be here anyway, whether it was Philadelphia or Tennessee or, you know, Timbuktu. I really didn't care. I knew there was a good chance that he wasn't going to be here, and I thought they could get draft picks for him, and the team was going nowhere, and I wanted to trade him. So, yeah, I would have absolutely traded him. Now, I don't know what you mean by offering a contract before. I mean, they didn't want him enough to give him the money that Philadelphia was willing to give him, and I'm sure somebody else would have given him the money similar. But he wanted to go win, play in Philadelphia, probably a little bit stick it to the Giants, but I don't care. God bless him. I have no ill will towards Saquon Barkley. I, unlike other Giant fans and the owner, and I understand the owner has a different relationship, but like I wasn't sick to my stomach when I saw him in a Philadelphia Eagles jersey for the first time. I just wasn't. I like Saquon Barkley. He's as talented a running back as there is in the league, arguably, this side of, you know, a couple, maybe, you know. But I have no memories of Saquon Barkley doing anything of real significance for me. And I know that's blunt and cold on some level, but as a Giant fan, he and Daniel Jones are the face of the worst period, era period in my Giant fandom, period. Like, that's it. There is no worse era for me, and I think you'd have to go back to the 70s, you know, before George Young, to find a time period where the Giants were worse than they have been over the last 7-8 years. And Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones are the face of it. They're the top draft picks. They're the top positions. They're the talented players. They're the ones who were wearing the gold jackets and in full bloom love. That's what I was told. This guy's a Hall of Famer, and I'm in full bloom love with this one. And they have done nothing, not at their own fault. I'm not saying Saquon has sucked, therefore they have lost. Daniel Jones has sucked, therefore they have lost. It's not their fault necessarily, but they have been the face of a miserable time period in Giant history. So I don't really understand this deep connection. So much of the fan base. I say one negative thing about Daniel Jones, I get bombarded with, but he's had no offensive line and he's had no wide receivers. Don't you understand? If the man was just given a chance, just give him a chance, Chris. Just give him a chance. He's had a chance. And Saquon Barkley had his chance. And they lost spectacularly. And seasons were over before Thanksgiving. And I've watched the Philadelphia Eagles kick my ass for the last 6-7 years straight. Even more than that. I mean, you have to go back, to Ron Dixon running the kickoff return in 2001, the last time the Giants beat the Eagles in a meaningful game. And that's the last time. So do you think, like, suddenly watching Saquon Barkley, who never did anything for me, run up and down the field as the Eagles kick the Giants' ass for the, I don't know, umpteenth time in the last 20 years, it's really going to, like, drive a dagger through my heart? It is not. It is not. It just isn't. So, in hindsight, what would I do? What's best for the New York Giants? Trade Saquon Barkley and get picks back. Now, in the moment, I understood it on some level. They were afraid of the team completely falling apart. I get it. These guys have jobs. You're out to win some games, right? And you could argue whether a third-round pick or whatever you were going to get versus the value of a team just absolutely decimated and feeling like, well, geez, I mean, now what chance do we have? And maybe the whole thing fell apart, and maybe we're not standing here with Shane and Dable because they won one game the rest of the year, as opposed to the handful of games they won down the stretch. I get it. But to me, whatever they were going to do wasn't impacted by whether or not he signed with Philadelphia. Had no impact. I wanted him traded because I wanted picks. Other people didn't want him traded because they didn't want the season falling apart. I don't think him signing with Philadelphia changes anything. I really don't care. Danny and Belrose, what's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. Had a good day. I don't know if you've seen the movie Hitman on Netflix. It's pretty good. I recommend it.
All right, yeah, I haven't. I know that's where, is it Michael Fassbender?
I don't know the guy's name, but the guy that was in Top Gun 2.
He was in Top Gun 2. Oh, no, the new one. I'm sorry, the new one coming out. Yeah, no, I saw it. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, Glenn Powell, yeah.
It was decent. And the girl from Morbius, you know?
So right. I'll check it out. Yeah, he's like a hitman, but he's constantly having these, like, different alter egos and stuff, right? I saw the trailer for it.
Yeah, he's actually a fake hitman. He works for the police. It's pretty interesting.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The Yankees, I think they'll be all right today. You know, I think Gio can get back on track. I think he just had a you know, rough couple starts, honestly. I think I was looking at potential, you know, free agent targets for, around the trade deadline. I kind of like Bregman at third base, and I like Tanner Scott for the bullpen.
Yeah.
What do you think of those?
No, I mean, I think they're great. I think that's, you're talking about Bregman on a down year, but ultimately, I mean, a proven postseason performer, a proven big game player, a two-time champion. I would love to bring Bregman here. I don't care that he's an Astro. I don't care. I want to win. Now, the problem is the Astros have kind of gotten off their ass here and started playing good baseball. I don't know if they'd be willing to move Bregman, certainly to the Yankees necessarily, but yes, certainly open to Bregman at third base. That would be a major upgrade from whatever they have at the moment. Even if LeMahieu's starting to get hot, and hopefully he's starting to at least resemble hot or come close to hot. Lukewarm, I take that. Not dead, I'll settle for that. But and then Tanner Scott, yeah, absolutely. He's one of the, he's had a great year. He's a premier talent level closer. I'd love to bring him in. I don't think I'd make him the closer necessarily. I still trust Clay Holmes, as stupid and crazy as I am. So I don't know if I'd make him the closer, but yeah, would love to have him in the bullpen. So those are legitimate answers. I think most Yankee fans would feel pretty damn good if at the trade deadline they got Bregman and Scott. I think you had Efros coming back from injury to the bullpen. That's two arms into the bullpen. Plus you've got a legitimate third baseman who even on a down year is still a proven hitter in this league. So yeah, that would be home run offseason. We'd be singing the praises of the great Brian Cashman. Anthony and Hawthorne, what's up, Ant? What's up?
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Hey, before I make my point real quick, the other thing that drives me nuts about movies, and another reason you could tell they're running out of stuff to make, is like it'll be like Christmas time and they release like a horror movie, or they'll release like a Christmas movie and it's like Midsummer. I hate when they do that. It drives me nuts. But to my next point...
Christmas movies in the middle of the summer, I guess, yeah. I can see. I guess there's red one. I don't know. Good. Yeah, good.
I hear a lot of people saying that Knicks fans have to relax. It's just Isaiah Hartenstein. It's his fifth team. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But they...
I think that's an excellent point. I couldn't agree more. That's a compelling argument. It is. Let me fill in the rest of the blanks for you. They needed him last year. Let's play Mad Libs. They changed offensively once he entered the lineup. They need a big man who can pass the ball. They can't trust Mitchell Robinson to stay healthy. There's a lot of they's, to be honest with you. And yes, I think there's a fine line. I think you're painting it kind of black and white where you're either in the camp of, hey, who needs him? He's a journeyman. They'll figure it out. Or, oh my God, how could we possibly expect this team to be anywhere near as good as it was last year without Hartenstein? There is, a middle ground there. And while I'm disappointed, the first thing is I felt like we should have been coming to grips with this. I know the news broke yesterday that he officially went to the Thunder. They couldn't offer him more money than other teams. And to the journeyman point, who expects someone like Hartenstein to turn down money? Like Jalen Brunson does it and turns down, I don't know, 50, 60 million or whatever, could be up to $100 million. He's still making $100 million and he's Jalen Brunson and he could, he's already made some money. I mean, you expect Hartenstein to turn down max, whatever he can take? He's going to make as much as he can make. God bless him. So I've been coming to terms with this for a while. What concerns me the most is Mitchell Robinson and OG Anunoby. And relying on them, both, because they're injury prone. I wanted OG and Hartenstein or Mitch and someone else, but I wanted OG. So, but Hartenstein's offense, his still ability to rebound, his ability to pass, his ability to create a little bit. You play that inside out game. He also had the little push shot. He could hit a foul shot. Like yes, he brings a bunch of different elements that Mitch doesn't bring. Now Mitch has been pretty good. And Mitch is one hell of a defender and rim protector, and he could throw down an alley-oop every once in a while. But I don't think it's a disaster. I think it's now they have to find a way to work around it and figure out ways to get similar production that they got from Hartenstein last year. I wish he were back, no doubt about it. This team is going to take a hit for it on some level. But we also can't look at it exactly like Bridges changes the team. I know they're bringing back a lot of the same players. I get that. But every year is a little bit different, and every team's a little bit different. And now the dynamic is different with Bridges and Randall healthy the entire time. Like, a lot of what Hartenstein became the sole and important part of the team was after Randall got hurt as well. So it's just a different dynamic, and we can't be so quick to just say, hey, last year he was so important to the team, how can they go without him? When this year the team's going to be different. And while I still wanted him, He's not here. And, yeah, the other options at center aren't great. So, you know, they might have to just, you know, get a body, someone who we might not have faith in, but then again, I think most of us considered Hartenstein a body 2 years ago. And we'll see what happens. I trust Leon Rose to, you know, evaluate talent. I mean, right now he's pitch perfect on what he's done. Everyone he's brought in has been better than I thought they were. And you can play some games and you can go small. And you can, you know, I feel like OG can play a five, maybe not for the whole game, but he could defend. I think he might even create offensive mismatch at that position. Same thing as Randall if you decide to move him to the five for a stretch and go small for a bit. Like, there are options. Tibbs is a good coach. They'll figure it out. So I guess I'm somewhere down the middle where I'm disappointed he's not back, but I also don't think it's a disaster. I think that it's going to be difficult, but they can find a way to scheme it up and still get similar production and go about it in a different way. Because they have to adapt. Adapt or die. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We'll come back. Continue to take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock right here on The Fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
There we go. Little Hanson at 4:45 in the morning. I'm out the window. I don't want to drive people crazy. Just trust my word. It's the way it should be. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Just listen. Middle of nowhere, Hanson. Just give it 10 minutes. It's not bad. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Let's get back to the phone calls. And here's the guy. I mentioned Daniel Jones, so here he is. Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Hey, Chris, you managed to do it. You managed to find some music worse than the Beatles, and it's Hanson. Good job.
It is worse than the Beatles, I'll give you that.
Chris, I need about 5 or 10 minutes airtime.
Well, you'll get what I give you, so let's see how it goes.
I've been debating with everybody in the groups, and I want to see if you agree or disagree with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. How can you incisively prove that Daniel Jones' contract is a bust? Because that's what people write, that it's already a bust. So how do they come up with that? They're saying it's a bust. What's the argument? How is his contract a bust?
Because the first year of it, he didn't play, and when he played, he was terrible. And now they have an injury-prone quarterback on their hands with a team that's probably not going to win anyway. So they gave money to a quarterback when, you know, they'll probably look to get out from under it next year.
Probably, right? And he played what? It was eight games. I thought it was seven. So he played eight games into a 4-year contract. I don't know. It's not logical. What if this year he has a good year? I'm just saying. So,
yes.
but as much as we could say it's a, but it's not yet. Like,
no.
This is the year right now, right? This is the year we evaluate. Everybody's evaluating him pre-Dable. Yeah, he was pretty bad, and he had turnovers.
Last year.
We know what he was.
No, post-Dable. What happened last year? He was awful.
He didn't get hurt.
He was awful, and he got hurt. Now, I agree with you. This year could change everything. Hey, they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. I wasn't sure he was going to get a contract. He had a good year. They went to the playoffs. He was brilliant in a playoff game. He got a contract. A year can change things. I've never said otherwise. I don't think it's going to happen. But, of course, if this year he's great, The idea of it being a bust contract will fade away because now, okay, let's see what he does next year. But as of right now, what else should be thought of the contract? Other than, well, we'll wait and see. Daniel Jones is going to have that on his tombstone. We'll wait and see. Like, that's the story of Daniel Jones. That's going to be his memoirs. Daniel Jones, we'll wait and see. So,
and the proof with the Giants is here. Giants are player killers. I'll give you three or four. I haven't even researched this. I just was thinking about it while I'm driving. Like, you know, Evan Engram actually has become, I get it. I was angry when he dropped that pass. I got
against
it.
Against Philadelphia.
Like, Jaguars are no world beaters. Trevor Lawrence is no world beater. And it's like, he's starting to be he was like one of their main targets there.
Oh, he had over 100 receptions.
And listen, we know Saquon, like, you can't argue. The guy's a top running back, top whatever you want to say,
yeah,
three,
no doubt.
Four, five, whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
He's not going anywhere with the Giants. It's a team issue. And even the guy, remember Feliciano? He's like the worst offensive lineman. He's actually not terrible, right? He's always on the 49ers. I had a 49er fan call me and he goes, that guy's not that bad. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, they, they've saying, had a couple,
you're
going
to see he's garbage. The Giants are not a good team, Chris, and that's what, yeah. that's the last point I'm trying to make.
I think that's fair on some level,
Jones,
yeah.
That's ludicrous.
I don't focus on Daniel Jones.
You're worried about the quarterback. Like a guy's going to come in here and just change the Giants, some quarterback. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well,
There's so many holes.
Well,
so
I mean, again, what did you think? What was the perception of the Texans prior to their quarterback change? What was the perception of the Texans? What was the perception of the Bengals? What was the perception of, you know, a myriad of teams? I mean, the idea that the quarterback can't change the team and that's some sort of, you know, out there, it doesn't make sense to you logic when it happens constantly. It happens constantly. Do other things have to change? Of course. Like, they're going to have to improve the offensive line. I'll give it to you. I think they've been a poorly coached team. Hello. They had terrible head coaches prior to Brian Daboll. Terrible. And now he's on a prove it year to find out if he's either going to buck the trend or join the list. But, like, the quarterbacks change everything. That's how it works. That's how it works. And as far as Daniel Jones, like, I get it, but I've just seen it so many times, so many years. Like, how many times, how many seasons does he get to prove it? Like, you're willing to give him all these years, and somehow, like, he's been bad for all these years. If he goes out and plays well next year, well, that changes everything. I mean, I guess, but it doesn't prove your point is right if he has one good year out of six bad ones. Like, that's the problem with the Daniel Jones lovers. They think that game against Minnesota proves something. It doesn't prove anything other than he's capable on some level. But that's not enough. I've got a bunch of games where I prove he's terrible. A bunch of games. Including the next week in Philadelphia. After the Minnesota game. And he's injury prone. That's the other thing. Now he's coming off his legs are the most valuable part of him. Whatever you may think of Daniel Jones, you can't argue with the fact he's been more successful with his legs than his arm. And now he's coming off a blown out knee, and every time he gets tackled, I'm worried about his neck. He's missed time every season but one. I'm not saying he's a bum. I'm not saying he has no talent. I'm not saying he has no ability. I'm not saying he can't be a starter in this league. I'm saying there are quarterbacks who absolutely can turn the Giants around. He ain't one. There are quarterbacks who absolutely can guarantee on some level success and sustained winning. He ain't one. And if I'm in a position where it's been however many years, 5, 6, 7 years now with him, and it's been nothing but losing, and they're not in a position roster-wise to take a capable, average quarterback anywhere, well, what am I doing with him? And why am I paying him big money? I'll pay a quarterback. I have no problem paying the quarterback, but he's got to be the guy. And we can laugh. We laugh at Dak Prescott, right? And that's the name I hear could be a possible replacement for Daniel Jones next year. If they don't get the contract in Dallas, you could see he'll be the biggest free agent since, you know, Tom Brady in 2020. And that could be a place where the Giants go. And we laugh, right? We laugh. The Dak Prescott who can't cut it in the playoffs. And while that's true, I mean, he's brought sustained winning to the Cowboys on some level, has he not? You think they're perfect everywhere? They're better than the Giants, sure. They're not perfect everywhere. I mean, you saw what just happened in the Texans. You think that, like, Nico Collins is, like, some outrageously good wide receiver? You think if Nico Collins was with Daniel Jones and the Giants, he'd be putting up the same numbers? I don't. Maureen Belmore, tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro. And you know, it's funny. You said the Daniel Jones lovers. I mean, is there a small group of lovers out there? I feel bad for them because I would say by the third or fourth week he'll be done, hurt or something. That's the sad part.
Well, I mean, I hope you're wrong, but that's probably more plausible to me than having a wonderful year that proves everything we've ever didn't believe about Daniel Jones.
I wanted to talk about Hartenstein. The guy was saying something, then he got disconnected. I don't know if you heard what happened.
Well, I heard what he said. He said,
I think he dropped his phone and he said the F word, AF. And then he said, he was going to say, I'm going to miss Hartenstein. My heart is broken. That's what he was going to say then, Chris.
My heart is broken. I'll tell you what, Maury, can I keep you on retainer? And every time someone drops off, you can tell me what they were going to say. It would prove a very helpful tool for me.
That would be great. I got you back, buddy.
Tonight is your night, bro.
Give the kids a hug. Take care, pal.
I'll give the kids a hug for you, Maury. Thank you. I don't know what the hell the guy was going to say. He got cut off.
I hope he didn't say the F
bomb. I didn't hear the F word. No, I didn't hear the F bomb. And I'm, perceptive of such things. It sounded like just he dropped the phone. I don't know what the hell happened to him. But he was talking about Hartenstein, yeah. And it is a loss, of course. Of course. But it's I can't view it as a devastating one. It's a disappointing one, and they're going to have to figure out a way to play without him. And I like him, and he definitely impacted the team. And he was great. He was great in the playoffs. And he overcame dealing with his own injuries. He had the Achilles heel thing he was dealing with the second half of the year. Hartenstein showed toughness. He showed the ability to make a big basket. He showed great ability to pass. He's not quite the rebounder Mitch Robinson is, but he got, 13, 14, 19 rebounds a game. He was everything they could have hoped for. He was, and you know what? What it does is it does empower me to believe in Leon Rose and that they have the ability to find guys like this. I mean, you look what they did just with the draft. Like, they took three picks. They got three players and three more second-round picks. And look at all the moves that they have made over the last handful of years and how every one has turned out better than you could have hoped. I mean, for Brunson, forget about it. I mean, they were being mocked for being the winners of the Brunson sweepstakes. Mocked. And now he's one of the top 10, bar none, players in the NBA. You got Hartenstein. You got DiVincenzo took another step. Josh Hart and how important he's been to this team. They trade for Anunoby. It transforms the team. Hartenstein, over the last two or three years, everybody they brought in has upped their game. Everyone. So you know what? He's got to do it again. He's got to do it again. And as much as I love Brian Cashman and we joke about it, there is not another executive in this town that I would trust more to it right now. He is on a streak. He's on a heater. And the way they're run, it is amazing to think for a second that these words are going to come out of my mouth. The New York Knicks might be the best run team in New York. That is so out there and asinine to say after two decades of by far, actually that's not, the Jets are giving them a run for their money, but I mean, at least the Jets popped up, won a few games, I don't know. Went to a couple AFC championship games. Did something. They won 10 games with Fitzpatrick. They figured
out. Yeah, but that's the equivalent of the Mellow Knicks, so.
Yeah, not really. I mean, this has been one of the worst run franchises in this city forever. Forever. And right now, you have to say they're as well run as any. And you know what? I'd like to put the Rangers there. And I think most people would, and I trust Chris Drury. But underwhelming free agency. As we saw a lot of guys go, who, yes, Stamkos getting a four-year contract for that kind of money at his age seemed ridiculous. There was a lot of contracts where the money seemed kind of out there. But this has been an extremely, extremely aggressive GM, an extremely, extremely aggressive front office that has attacked weaknesses. Right, they had the issue with Washington at the end of the year. They need to be tougher. Boom, like they have gone out there and been uber aggressive on trying to improve the team. And yes, they won the President's Trophy. And yes, I think as presently constituted, no doubt playoff team. But if you want to get to that next step, much like the Florida Panthers did, sometimes you have to make drastic moves. And sometimes you might have to overpay a contract. And sometimes you might have to go out there and make significant change so that this team that has been... who comes up against a wall when it comes to style of play, when it comes to playoff hockey, they just hit this wall where they can't get to that next level. And they didn't do anything to change anybody's opinion on whether or not they can get there. But there's still time. And the Garden's been as run, well-run as any of these teams in the city. And that's really remarkable to say. But that's it for me. Thank you, Rami. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. The warm-up show is next. I saw LaPresti out there, so he'll be part of it. I'll catch you tomorrow. I'm out of here.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.